Hello and welcome to the Pony Sync for May 12th, 2020. My name is Andrew Turley, and if everyone here could introduce themselves, that'd be great.
Hi, I'm Sean Allen.
Hi, I'm Theo Butler.
Hi, I'm Joe McElvain, and I'm having trouble finding the mute button at first.
I'm Ryan Hagenson.
I'm Gordon Tischer.
All right, that looks like everybody for now. So welcome to the Pony Sync. The issues that we're gonna go over or try to get to today are posted in the Pony channel, in the Pony Zulip in the Sync stream under the 5/12/2020 topic. So if anybody wants to follow along either now or you wanna check it out later, the list is there. So unless there are any objections, I think we'll start with PRs for RFCs. So the first one we have is 161, add the maybe library to the standard library.
Yeah, so there was some interesting discussion around this last time. I went back and looked a bit more. I think I left a comment here. It might have been somewhere else. I'm not seeing it. Yes, I did. So it looks like the maybe library is allocation free, and the same functionality that the maybe library has is not allocation free in iterTools.
Yes. However, in situations where you're using iterator, I would not expect it to escape. So I would expect that to be heap to stack optimized. But of course, yeah, there are definitely possible performance considerations.
I think that if we were to move forward with something where it would be using iterTools rather than that maybe, that we should test that assumption.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, when
we there would definitely be a... sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say that either way, there would almost certainly be some overhead due to indirection. I was hoping to get rid of some of the indirection involved with iterTools, but with the lack of generic type inference and the other issue that I ran into that I assumed wasn't a problem in the current compiler that I mentioned in the pull request, for now that's sort of just something we have to live with. So there would be other overheads as well.
If somebody has a, do you have a working example, Theo, that I could run locally and look at the LLVM IR locally and see if it truly gets optimized? The heap stack and whatever other issues we want to look at?
Yeah, I could probably make one quickly.
Okay, I mean, yeah, like, I guess I would say, since I'm one of the people on this call who has lots of experience reading the LLVM IR, I'd be happy to take a look at that if somebody wanted me to confirm or deny whether certain optimizations were made or not.
Okay. Sorry, so does anybody have any examples like that on hand? Or not for immediate use?
Not right now, but I can make one soon.
Okay, great. Okay. Sounds good. Is there anything else we need to discuss on this topic?
I don't think so. I think right now it's what's the performance implications here so that we can make more decisions moving forward.
Okay. Do we need to make a, somebody want to make a note of that in this issue? Or do we need to? Maybe we don't need to.
Sure, I'll just add in a comment saying that we're going to investigate the performance implications of using iterTools for this.
Perfect, thanks. Okay, PR 159, change type of invert to ambient authority.
I'm in favor. We're at the ready to vote, so I'm voting.
I am also in favor.
This is 159 on the RFC repo?
Yeah. Whoa!
Hello,
you did make it!
Yeah, you just snuck in.
Well, oh, I see you sent me a message 2 minutes ago as well.
Anyway, I'm in favor. But we're waiting here with Sylvanas. So.
I like how this change came about because of an RFC, and now we've decided to undo the RFC.
Okay.
Do you remember like 2 years ago when Benoit opened the RFC, Sylvan, to, in theory, improve testability around some stuff by having the ENV that comes in no longer, the ambient auth that comes in possibly be none as well?
The original one, env.root was always ambient auth, but you could have an environment that didn't necessarily give you ambient auth.
Yeah, and there was an RFC that changed that a couple years ago, and we're undoing that RFC basically with this one.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Hopefully that saved you some reading.
It totally did. Thank you.
You're welcome. That's basically what this can be summed up as. Here's this old officer. Undo that. Here's why. All right. So we in favor?
So wait, let me get this straight.
Okay.
So what we're saying is we are getting rid of the ability to create a new environment unless you already have ambient authority in order to populate root. Is that right? From my reading here?
Yes.
Read again.
Okay. I am... So... This basically gets... That means once you've got env.root, right, because ambient auth or none is pretty limiting. You either have everything or you have nothing, and that's kind of painful. Is that your thinking, Joe?
Let's see. Yes, that would be part of my thoughts on this topic. I wasn't the one to write the RFC, but yeah, that's one of the reasons I support it, is that this idea that we might, you know, be able to create a more limited end, that is... Like it's either ends up being either all or nothing, which is not super useful. And in the lieu of somebody coming up with a pattern for that would be more useful. I think we should just go ahead and remove this. And then in the future, like I said, if somebody comes up with a pattern that would be more useful for like saying, okay, I'm going to grant these capabilities, but not these ones. That would be very interesting, but without a design for it, there's like no use cases for it. Without a use cases for it, it's sort of just extra pain without any gain.
Totally makes sense. I'm in favor for that.
Yeah.
I think there's, there's some actually quite tricky stuff about saying, oh, here's the set of authorities that I give you. Unless those are derivable, unless you have something that allows you to derive those other authorities, and then you have this problem of, well, I want one from this package and one from this package. Well, there isn't some constructor that lets you do that. So it's actually quite a pain. So I think that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, the one way you could do it, someone would be with like a type parameter that says like here's an end with a type parameter that says, okay, here's the authority I'm attaching to it. And that authority could be anything, including like an object that has several authorities as its fields. But then, your code on the other side has to deal with that in a generic way, which becomes...
Yeah, you have a parameterized root at that point. And it's almost it's almost more like what we want then is some, instead of parameterizing ends, to say that there's some trait type that is, so that you have an open world type that is env.root, and then env.root implements something that say, that gives you a trait for fetching all the possible capabilities and many primitives that are single capabilities implement that. That actually kind of makes sense, but that's worth an RFC on its own and some actual thought as opposed to just blathering.
Yeah, I'd be interested yes. to see some of that thought expanded. That's, would love to hit more on that.
Okay, cool.
So, we accepting this?
I am. I don't know about everybody else.
Yes, from me.
Yes,
for me. Andy, Gordon?
Yes.
All right. Yep, I'm going to merge it. Can you do the, because I still haven't got around to writing the thing that will automatically do the things, Theo. Can you do the things?
Yeah, I'll do the
things. And I promise I will get to the, before I move to Massachusetts, I will get to writing the thing which will make it so that you don't have to do, so that you or no other human has to do the things anymore.
All right. I'll hold you to that.
I know what needs to be done. It's just a matter of doing those things.
I would like everyone to notice that Sean has promised that no human will ever again have to do the thing.
I've heard that,
especially me.
For all values of thing, by the way.
No. Just the thing, which Theo and I both know exactly what the thing is.
All right.
Because Theo and I are like two of the only two of like the group of three people who've ever done the thing.
It's best not to ask too many questions about the thing, lest you be pulled into the thing.
Yeah, if you're going to get rid of all things, you're talking about something like universal annihilation or nirvana or something along those lines. Like it's rather weird.
Just worried that we're going to owe John Carpenter money if we keep talking like this.
I was going to say the same thing.
Turns out we all already owe John Carpenter money.
No, he owes me money for every one of his shitty movies I ever watched.
Oh. Ow. Coming out strong.
That's for the record, folks.
I was just going to say, it's been recorded, Sean. Come on.
The only movie of his I like is that stupid-ass vampire one.
All right, moving on.
Thank you. Oh, that one. Okay. I'm not even, never mind. I'm not going to deal with this.
You do okay, realize maybe, he made Dark Star. I'm just saying. Everybody knows he made Dark Star and Big Trouble in Little China. So just like, I don't even know
why. I tried.
You did. It's a valiant effort. Moving on to issues under RFCs, we have one 165 request to add the pipeline operator.
Oh, the issue, yes.
Yeah, the issue.
Has there been any traffic on this since the last sync call?
Ryan had a bit of stuff that was in the Zulip, but that didn't make it over here. I'm guessing that if there's some consensus on it from the Zulip, it will make it over. Yeah, right. Is that something where you felt like you'd want to bring your thoughts from there over, Ryan, or not so much?
Yeah, I can bring my thoughts over. I have been a little scattered lately, as I think Sean is aware.
Yeah.
Yeah, as we all have.
Understandable.
Yep.
So, I'm just looking at the pipeline issue that's open 165. I think in the past when we've talked about this, we've always wondered about first versus last argument, receiver versus argument, that kind of stuff. I think using two operators to distinguish between first and last parameters is a nice solution. I think that's pretty reasonable. What I'm wondering about here is dealing with wanting the left-hand side to be the receiver as opposed to an argument.
So we're gonna... talking about calling a function on an object as if it were defined as a method of that object?
Right. So let's say you have X pipeline foo invoke, then that would be X dot foo, essentially. Because the pattern that you end up with in F sharp, which is the place where I've used pipelines the most, is you end up lifting any kind of function that's over an object, which is totally fine in a functional language, to be a function in a module, where sort of the equivalent of what we do in ponies, we do a function in a primitive that would essentially take the first argument and use it as the receiver in the real underlying function. The compiler would optimize that out. There's no performance impact, but it's just a whole bunch of boilerplate code that gets written to transform a first argument into a receiver.
Yeah, so in your example of X pipe foo, you're saying that that's equivalent to calling X dot foo, and foo is already a method on X, or that we're...
Let's say you have a complex expression E, mm-hmm. right? It's not a simple identifier, and it has some type. And you want to use a pipeline operator to pipe it through. Maybe the answer is we don't even bother about it, and you use normal dot notation. You just say to hell with it at that point. And that's fine. I'm not against that. I just want to make sure that we're making that decision.
I mean, you could use a lambda. That'd be a little less heavy than a primitive, but same idea.
Yep. That's true.
I mean, if I'm understanding correctly, and it's equivalent to the dot, I would say you just use the dot in that situation, unless there's some syntactical, like, operator precedence example, a reason why you would want to use the pipe instead of the dot.
Well, I hope not. Death to precedence.
Yeah, I was going to say that's something that hasn't been talked about here, like this pipe bind as closely as, you know, dot and build closer.
We have to be a little bit. So some of the examples here are using interleaved kinds of pipeline operators, and that makes me nervous. I would say that in those examples, we would demand parentheses and say that it really is an operator like any other operator. And it doesn't get special cased. But you know, I don't know. We already have the example of dot angle bracket being not actually an operator. So maybe that's not the case.
Like a dot.
Yeah.
I think it binds as closely as the dot and no closer.
That's right. Yeah.
For this, it would actually be something we wouldn't want to bind exactly as close as the dot, because you're expecting to use
dot would have to
something
bind
pipe x dot y.
Yeah.
And you're expecting x dot y to be bound together closer
that's
to
right.
the pipe.
So actually, maybe that's the issue.
Precedence.
Maybe that's exactly the problem I was having with the dot over the thing, and that we don't have to worry about that at all as long as this is treated as a standard operator. If you had E pipeline X plus Y, do you have an expectation of order? To me, I don't have an expectation of order, and I would want parentheses to clarify.
Yes. I would agree with that example, at least for the X dot Y, yeah. And then when you get into mixing pipeline, different pipeline operators, maybe I might have a different expectation, but yeah.
Even there, I think parentheses are not that hard for that. Well, I don't know, maybe I'm imagining that.
Well, it kind of breaks the pipeline up quite a bit. If you're imagining like, maybe we shouldn't get too deep into the different pipeline operator, because some others had given feedback in the Zulip that they don't like the idea of using multiple pipeline operators to distinguish position, and that the position should be distinguished in some other way. We shouldn't get too deeply into the precedence of having multiple pipeline operators.
Okay.
I will go direct for the call because for that. With every language I've ever used a pipeline type thing in it, almost all of them have basically what's in this, which is target first and last, and there's an operator for those. And I found them to end up being of limited utility. There's something where in the middle, I would like to run it into something which has three parameters, and I would like it to go into the middle one, for example. And it just, I found the number of places where the pipeline type things or the threading macro enclosure, all of these things to actually be useful to me is to be so small as to be like, I don't think this is worth the carrying cost of this being in the language. And so I have nothing against the concept of this per se, as long as like we could address those things, which for me have always made it in the past something that I didn't end up actually using in languages really.
Right. Yeah, well, that's fair.
Yeah, so we've talked about in the Zulip, we've talked about different options with like incorporating something, you know, some numbers in there to specify which order or which position it goes to, if not the first.
yeah, that's going to become parsing hell pretty quickly.
Something that Elixir does that I really like is they have this like really hyper streamlined syntax for like small lambdas, where if I have, let's say, x dot y with parentheses ampersand one inside of it, then that comes out as a lambda where the first parameter of the lambda goes to the position where I specified the ampersand one in the expression. So that's kind of a nice solution to this with the way they do pipelines. So that way, I can create a lambda with like kind of no syntax overhead other than just adding ampersand one wherever it is in the position of the arguments that I want that to be applied. And if so I don't do that, then it ends up not creating the lambda and it uses the function and it goes to the first position.
So one of the things I've done quite a bit in F sharp is just lambda wrap anything where the parameter is in the wrong place. So just use the normal pipeline operator. If you want to juggle parameters, lambda wrap your actual target,
right?
And just juggle that way.
So what I was describing in Elixir is kind of it's the same mechanism, but a very terse syntax for it.
Yeah. Well, I just wonder how much we want additional syntax for it as opposed to just lambda wrapping, which would just work. Because
yes,
for that kind of thing, I mean, Pony's lambda compilation there would be down to straight line code. It would just inline the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. I think that is that it's worth adding here. Okay. I'm not necessarily a super fan of Pony's lambda syntax as it currently exists. But
fair enough. It's because there's too many types on it, in my opinion.
Although I did, a while at like, you know, a couple of years ago, I added inference for those types when it has a antecedent, which in this case it would, so.
Yeah, okay.
So that's cool.
Okay, yeah, that's true. I forgot about that, yeah.
You can never have too many types, Sylvan.
Oh, yes.
You can have too many explicit types.
This is one that you and I will continue to disagree on.
Okay.
I mean, he made for escape from New York, for God's sake. I mean, come on.
You're not helping the argument with me, man. Especially, I mean, you're just bringing up movies I don't like.
Rough. So, Andrew, I'm adding notes to the ticket.
Great.
About what we discussed.
Awesome. Okay.
Sorry, I called you Andrew.
No,
it's literally his name.
It happens. It is the name that I was given.
You can call me Joseph if you want.
Ooh, that sounds so formal. I'm going to do that sometimes.
Joseph is my middle name.
When you're reprimanding me, yeah.
Guys, this is being recorded. all right. So I'm going to move on to Pony C, unless there are any objections or any other repos that people want to hit first. Take that as no. Okay, so we have one open PR. Switch Linux nightly and release config to Matrix. That's 3554.
Yes, I want Gordon's feedback on this before it gets merged, because basically, Gordon's probably just about the only other person who's really worked a lot with the Cirrus CI config. I think this makes for something that's much more maintainable than what we currently have and be more maintainable going forward, but I would like Gordon's opinion on that. And I'm fine with giving him a chance to look at it and give feedback. This is not super time sensitive.
Fair enough.
I'll take a look at it.
Yeah. I think it's nicer, but I could see somebody being like, "Oh, I don't think so," but I think it is.
I just approved it.
Okay, so you think it's nicer? I can just see this as we add more things for like the different distros, right, for Linux, that this would be much easier to parse than just, another like 50, 60 lines for each one of them being added instead of, like, hey, here's five new lines.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, I will merge this then, and hopefully it doesn't blow up tonight. Hopefully I actually did this correctly.
Fingers crossed.
Do you have the proper image in your head, Sylvan, for fingers crossed?
I do.
Awesome.
What have I done? All right.
Oh, come on, Andy. You have to know the image, too. I mean, you've known me long enough. The fingers crossed image?
Yes. Okay. All right. Far more innocent than I thought. Moving on.
There's nothing more wholesome than Kevin Bacon in a Logitech commercial, man.
Yeah, that was the thing, was that I was having trouble accessing the right part of my brain. The bacon part is off on an edge. Okay.
Is that part in the donut?
That part may be in the donut, yes. Okay. I made beignets this weekend. It's more like a brain beignet, actually. Okay, issues. In PonyC, we have 3555, which is the release 0.351, which targeting the release for the first week of July. Anything else you want to say about that right now, Sean? Or?
My plan at this point, because of how really nice and easy the release stuff is to kind of stick to the general release thing that we have for a schedule. If something comes up where like there's a breaking change, my plan at this point is to just do releases more often when there's breaking changes. So if somebody does that, the ENV RFC, for example, I'd do a release before then as well. It's easier to get it out there more, less, oh, hey, here's a fix that needs to be done, but doesn't get merged until this actually gets released, blah, 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 et cetera, type thing. But that's all I'm going to say.
Got it. Okay. Issue 3551, which is premature termination of Pony runtime under some situations.
Yes, I changed it to some situations because we no longer know what the situations are.
Yeah.
That sounds not good.
And at this point, this is waiting for feedback from Sebastian on him running with pony --noscale to see if it's something related to the scaling code. He has a application which under large number of cores tends to terminate early and seemingly in a deterministic way and happens more often if back pressure code is on. He had a patch where he turned off the back pressure code and he thought that it was back pressure related, but it turns out that no, it's just whatever this is that's happening is less likely to happen when the back pressure stuff is turned off. So our next attempt for something is to see if it happens with the scaling off. The one nice thing that it was a side effect of this is he got me to look at the back pressure code, which got me to question whether the atomics were correct or not, which then got Sylvan to tell me, no, some of the atomics handling is not correct, particularly on ARM. And we put that in, and who knows, maybe that will be the end of the seg faults that we see occasionally in CI on ARM.
Okay.
one can always hope on that last bit. I mean, there's no reason to think it necessarily would, but, you know, there's also no reason to think it wouldn't.
And those are two logically equivalent situations. Okay. All right, then. So we'll get into that. 3544 Pony C build error summary on Windows. What's going on here?
It's from David.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what the problem is and how to reproduce it.
I'm not clear. I'm not clear either. His English is pretty good, but in this case, I'm not really sure. He seemed to have made some changes for some thing, and I don't understand them or what's going on, so I asked for a PR. But it seems to be something related to, he's using VS 2019 preview for some reason. Maybe because that's what he has. I don't know. But yeah, I'm not sure.
T constructor in a struct in a C file is very suspicious. That's depending on compiling C and C++ on Windows and inserting a C++ style constructor on pool block T.
Yes, I'm not sure what that's supposed to be fixing. I think that's the thing.
Yeah. He does have a point about ARM support on Windows. We've never even attempted ARM support on Windows because until very recently...
Windows runs on ARM? What?
Exactly.
Yes. That is so the right response. I don't even know what to say.
When
yes.
did this happen?
So
I know that.
Windows used to run on ARM, and then their Windows ARM-based devices essentially... stop being made.
Ah, yes.
Those. And then there was some time where it didn't, but now there's another ARM-based Windows device.
Yeah.
I cannot remember which Surface it is that has an ARM in it.
The thing that he's pointing to, though, is part of LLVM.
I don't
think that is.
So this project definition,
mm-hmm.
I know he's saying LLVM:51, which is not telling me everything I need to know. But this, I believe, is the language support we want out of LLVM. Am I crazy here?
He seems to, no, well, his thing was change this thing, which is in the LLVM source, if I understand it correctly, from being...
Oh, if it's LLVM source, then there's nothing we can do. But I thought this was our source.
No, everything in lib LLVM is LLVM source.
Okay, I wish we knew the actual file he was talking about. Okay.
Hey. We'll see if he gets back at some point with it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Union type bug. That's 3543.
This is a fun one. Does the thing from Zulip that Jason Carr identified make sense?
Mm-hmm.
argument, not a subtype of parameter on numPrint. Well, map.
And if you take, if you remove the, if you remove the one from the unit for each, it's unit of ones. If you remove the first definition for the one that doesn't have a return type, then it will compile. So it's the existence on each of the lambda that takes a B, but returns none, with that as part of the definition for the union for each, then this no longer, it doesn't compile.
Well, that's exciting.
Yes.
I think I'm more confused as to why the latter does compile without the union type.
Wait, why would you be confused why it compiles? Maybe I'm missing.
It just ignores the lambda. It never invokes the lambda. So as long as the thing has a signature that looks like takes some type, returns the same type. We're here. It's looking for something that is an I-32, and it's getting an I-32.
Scratch my previous comment, Sean. I was reading it wrong.
Okay. Hey, I have the benefit of having looked at this for 25 minutes to figure out what was going on in Zulip. And then Jason beat me to the answer by about like 2 minutes. So yes, I'm sure Jason probably put in an equal amount of time. Thank you very much, Jason Carr, for that.
Yeah, I was going to throw myself under the bus and say maybe it was the lambda inference I was touting earlier that caused this issue, but lambda inference is not coming into play here.
Yeah, I don't think it is. Interestingly,
I wonder what happens if you change the order.
I changed the order and it didn't affect it. But if you add a second argument, so you make it I-32 comma B, it works just fine.
Oh, I tried the order, but not that. Yes, that makes sense because the one below it works and it has the. It has the two parameters. Yeah.
Yeah. And BI32 works similarly.
Is it somehow seeing those two things as equivalent?
But if you tell it returns an A, it still doesn't work. If you give it a return type separate from none, it still doesn't work.
Is it seeing them as equivalent somehow with ignoring the return type and just picking one?
That might be it.
But then I mean, the union type being folded to ignore one of them. And then the order should matter. So.
Okay, so. It is consistently refusing to look at the one with the damn return type.
I know. Yeah. So if it has nothing to do with the definition order. Yeah. That's one of the first things. So, but there could be something maybe in the fold where in the folding code where it's deterministically folding the one with the return type away. Maybe.
The thing is, if it was folding, let's see, go ahead.
I. parameter type is BB. Oh, and that's the instantiation. Oh, wow, that's confusing. Okay, I apologize. There's a notation here where it's saying what a type is that I don't understand. If you try a straightforward compile and in the info, you look at the second part of the error, the second info statement for main.pony 418, it says parameter type is B:B and then a bunch of stuff in brackets.
Well, the type parameters are being like lifted into the object literal, right? Lifted, hoisted. Am I using the right word there?
Well, in some sense, they're being lowered, but so they're being lowered. So the type parameters from the type are being lowered into the lambda definition that's inside the definition of each. Okay, so it's not, in some sense, if it said A and B on that, it would give us an idea of what the binding for B is. Instead, it's positional, and we have to go and look at the type. Okay, fair enough.
Oh, you're right. The that parameter type, where the hell did that come from?
Right.
Wait, oh, I32 val, okay, array.
That's what it is.
Okay, oh, no, you're right. It is really confusing when you look at it, though. Yeah.
And then we're saying that a lambda that takes an I32 and returns an I32 is not a subtype of a lambda that takes an I32 and returns an I32 because it's saying ref is not a subcap of val because the lambda itself is a ref here. And it's expecting it to be a val. That's what the issue is that.
Wait, which lambda is not a...
It's claiming that the incoming lambda is a ref.
Oh, you know why it's claiming that? It's because whenever it lifts like this partial application object, it creates this object literal from the partial application, and it treats that method like a ref because it has access to those fields, the fields being the earlier things that were partially applied in. The receiver, it's not the code that generates that object literal for the partial application is not smart enough to realize that this is a primitive, and the primitive could be not a field but rather, static.
Be static. Okay, but then why the hell does it compile?
For map, you mean?
For map.
And if you make it not a union anymore for each.
No, it doesn't. That does not allow a ref. You're right.
No, it doesn't. And each will compile if you make it not a union and it's just the
one of them.
The B that returns a B.
Yep. Works just fine.
So I think, I think it's two bugs, right? It's the bug that the primitive is treated like a ref. Just because our partial application code doesn't really account for that immutable case.
Yep.
And then we've got some other bug that is allowing the other cases to compile when they should not.
Ooh.
And if we fix both bugs, then it would be okay overall, I think.
Well, that's bloody dangerous. Let's try making it explicit that that damn thing is a ref, that num... print partial application is a ref.
Like lambda wrapping it with a ref?
I was going to say, I'm just going to write me a little goddamn lambda.
Yeah.
That captures env.
Thank you. Wait, isn't num missing its type parameters? Or no, sorry, its default, never mind. Yeah, so I did what you described, Sylvan, with like, you know, lambda that captures end. I get that same kind of error, right? I see ref is not a subcap of val.
Yeah, that's what I'm, yep, just got there. Yep.
And if I remove the end capture so that it's a, you know, a lambda val, there's no capture, it's like static away. So then, yeah, so if I just have like a lambda with i32, it returns i32, and inside it does num.printi.
I'm doing exactly the same thing. This is hilarious.
It's happy. Yeah. So it compiles okay when the end is not captured.
Do we want to keep going on this, or do we want to?
No.
Sorry. I don't mean to kill the fun. Just sounds like there's a rabbit hole here we can go down.
Yep.
Okay. I guess if either of you finds anything else out, or just if you have anything more to add, don't forget to stick it in there. Okay. Hang on just a second. Holy cow.
Yeah. I got my labels thing.
Oh, okay.
I was gonna say I had a thing too.
Should we finish out the Pony C issues and then talk about the labels thing, or do you want to talk about the labels thing now, Sean? Yeah.
No, we can finish up those, then we can talk about the labels thing if people can run over a little, and then we can talk about Joe's thing.
Okay. Is that all right with
everyone? People can run over. Sure. Okay.
Is that all right with everyone? Anyone?
Well, I guess specifically, okay. Sylvan, are you good to answer a question or two from me?
Yes.
Maybe right after this. Okay.
And he already knows he already knows the vague general area of the questions.
Wonderful.
3540, default type parameters may not access prior type parameters.
Yeah, so this is a thing that I assumed worked in the current Pony compiler, which doesn't. And I suppose I shouldn't be surprised. I just always assumed that it worked. I feel like I thought I had done this before. But yeah, it's really just a matter of having a default type type parameter that is able to access ones that were in the prior type parameters.
This totally should work.
Yeah,
I am honestly totally surprised that it doesn't work.
Yeah, it would be very very useful for removing a lot of indirection in the iter tools library, even without generic type inference.
Ah, cool. I thought that worked. Sorry, that is clearly my fault.
you don't know that.
Oh, no, I remember that code pretty well. I might just have a look at some blame and see.
Okay.
It's going to be a tricky one to unpack, I imagine, but yes.
I'm glad that the answer isn't, that actually causes problems in the type system.
No, that should absolutely
that's
work.
Because I was thinking, it's like, we allow, you know, F-bounded polymorphism type stuff, so like, this should be fine, right?
Exactly. This should, for exactly that reason, this should work.
Okay, I'm glad that my intuition on that was fine.
Yep, totally.
Okay. So 3536, C compiler used as linker gets hard coded. It doesn't look like we actually had anything beyond what was here last week, unless somebody wants to say anything about it.
This is just sad. This is sad, and I don't know what the proper answer is.
I think this is a frustration that that a lot of people have had. That's really about it.
Yeah.
This issue is just stating that this is a thing that should be improved.
Okay, I'm going to put enhancement on it, right?
Yeah, this is a thing we've discussed for a very long time.
So okay.
Every once in a while.
I don't remember discussing this before, and it just made me so sad when I realized it.
It was one of the things that I've heard Sebastian talk about every time he's come back.
Yep.
Wanting to help fix.
So... I have a question.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Can we finally switch to using LD as a library?
He said not yet.
Damn. Why not?
Nobody has the answer to that, except for Sebastian. Sebastian said he looked at it and he said not quite yet.
Okay. I'll see.
And I don't know anything beyond that.
I'll see if I can rustle up a bit of Seb's time and find out. I mean, theoretically, we could like look at it ourselves or something. But to be honest, it's so complicated, and Seb has already looked at it. So I'll try and find out. Because if we could LLD as a library, even if we still had to do some crafty stuff on Windows with VC bars, this would be a huge win.
Okay. All right. And 3529, another way to crash PonyC.
I would just like to give some extra points to that issue title. Is that okay? Can we give that an extra point?
there's some discussion around the name.
So the fun part for this is this only happens on Windows.
Oh,
what?
Yes, it only happens on Windows.
Oh,
sorry,
okay.
Let me change that.
I remember looking at this. I've had this reaction already.
It's only been reproduced on Windows. I can't reproduce it on Ubuntu 18.04 with the same compiler. Yes.
Yeah, but Gordon can on Windows. So
it's an ASIO thing, but how is it an ASIO thing? What is it ASIOing? What's the ASIO event?
Wait a minute. But it's PonyC that dies.
Yeah.
So it's not ASIO.
Yeah. No, the backtrace has ASIO, Pony ASIO event set writable at the bottom.
No, 3529.
Yep.
No, it does. I'm looking at exactly where he's talking about. The backtrace, right it's before.
Last
call. Oh, yeah. Weird. Last God, call. Okay.
But I'm guessing that what that is a good old-fashioned red herring, that it's an address that the stack itself is getting munched, that these addresses, some of them happen to point into some code, but none of them happen not to point into any code.
Well, we should definitely make a comment of that before anyone starts looking too deeply into that red herring.
Yeah. And you'll notice...
Would we get a better backtrace if it was a debug build of PonyC?
These code addresses are clearly absolute nonsense, because if you look at them, they're actually...
Yeah.
Many of them are exactly the same, and they're actually sequential to a point. Like, mm-hmm. That's probably not a thing. Probably. I only said probably.
Gordon, do you happen to have a PonyC built as debug on your Windows machine that could see if we could get some kind of better backtrace out of it?
I can do that. Just give me a couple minutes.
It doesn't need to be right now. I just thought that might help see exactly what pass this is happening in, for example.
Yeah. That's pretty exciting, though.
Pass annotation. So that's the annotation code that Benoit added. Checking for annotation on an AST that doesn't exist.
Right.
Probably during code gen. I think annotations are mostly dealt with in code gen because they're being used for likely and unlikely stuff. So
yeah,
if it's a code gen, that might help explain why it's only on Windows. So it's some branch of code gen that will.
I think that's a good call because it actually goes through all the packages and then errors out. So I think you're probably right.
So I'll add a comment that says this is probably in CodeGen.
Ah, yes. He gets almost the same backtrace on issue 3531.
Same bogus backtrace?
Yep. After a assertion in course literal to type, which he has found an interesting place where the literal type inference fails. But in this case, it has no idea what number type he means, because he's just saying one, has no other type information. So he gets an assertion, and he gets almost the exact same batch trace. It differs slightly because of a base address difference, but other than that, it's the same.
Added comments in that ticket. It's stuff that we mentioned. Do we have one? Oh, we're at the end.
We're at the end? What? Huh?
Yep.
Oh, I just meant it's the end of the hour, so we should probably skip the labels discussion.
Okay. So, Sean, do you want to talk about the labeling issue that you
discussed? So I'm trying to get the labels so that they're same across all of our repositories. PonyC is kind of different from all the others, and I started looking at, you know, a bunch of the labels that we created, and I don't think most of them are actually... I think there's a bunch of them that are not particularly useful or meaningful, and I wanted to get rid of some of them, and I wanted to get people's feedback on a couple others. So like blocked, we have blocked, but it's only for, it's for bug and enhancement. Is blocked actually a particularly meaningful thing? Like for me, it's a label that doesn't provide much value, but if it did, I would say we could just have a blocked label itself rather than a special bug blocked and a special enhancement blocked.
I think I might have been the one who set those up that way. I think the general idea was that you'd have, you know, you determine if it's a bug or enhancement, and then it has this kind of workflow that you go through, and it has like a step one, a step two, etc. But it's not super useful, and I don't care if we change it. So
you and I came up with it together. Yeah.
Okay.
So
the way you were talking about it, I was like, okay, I'm probably to blame for that. But yeah.
No. It was you and I. We came up with it. Okay. Yeah.
We'll be blamed together. But yes, I'm okay with the kinds of changes that you discuss.
In the Zulip. Okay. So pretty much basically we would have like bug, the changelog ones, do not merge, documentation, duplicate, enhancement, good first issue, help wanted, invalid question, triggers release, won't fix. So like we'd get rid of the needs investigation, under investigation, ready for work. I would want to do needs discussion. We have for enhancement, we have needs discussion, plus we also have needs discussion during sync. I think that just having a single needs discussion / investigation, or needs investigation perhaps, or maybe needs triaging for bugs, and then a needs discussion, these are just broad general labels that could be applied to anything, I think would be good rather than having them be tied to a specific thing.
Yeah, the discussion during sync can definitely go away now that we have Andy's tool.
Yeah, I think it could still be good just to have needs discussion because, well, that means there needs to be some kind of discussion for it, right?
Also, I think duplicate might be not too helpful because, like, I don't know, usually for duplicates, you just say, you know, there's a duplicate of, you know, number, something else, and then you just close it, right?
Yeah, we could kill duplicate off. I think duplicate could be. Yeah, I was definitely really loosey goosey on. So for ones that I carried over right now from the other one, I would say that invalid question and duplicate, as well as won't fix, are all ones where I'm like, do those need to be labels? I mean, they certainly have some value there. You could just look at it without having to read all of the text. I think that's really the value of duplicate as a label. We haven't really used it. I don't know. Do people have thoughts on any of those ones?
My only thought is that it can actually be kind of hard to categorize the reason why you're closing something other than actually giving a reason. So my suspicion is we tend not to use those because actually it's a pain in the ass to pick one. So I would say just get rid of them. But if people disagree and they think they're valuable, please tell me.
Does anybody want to argue for keeping duplicate, invalid, question, and won't fix? Okay.
I can sort of have an argument for won't fix, just in case you want to like keep it open for some reason. But if that's not the intention, then get rid of it.
I think it won't fix is one where it's generally it's like, hey, we're closing this and we're saying for people that we're not going to fix it.
Yeah,
right?
In that case, if you're closing it, then there's no reason to have a won't fix tag on it, I think.
Okay, so I'm gonna kill those four. Okay, so Gordon, does the Windows label help at all for you? You do most of the Windows stuff. Is it useful to you, or should we just kill it? I kind of am against it because it makes the Windows stuff feel like a second class citizen to me, and I don't think it should be treated that way.
Yeah, I haven't ever like searched for that label or anything, so it's kind of neither here nor there for me.
Okay. Blocked. Is blocked a thing that would be useful? Or is it as a label where it can just be, hey, here we go. Last comment is this is blocked on blah, blah, blah.
I think we've tended to use needs discussion for that because generally speaking, our blocker is needs discussion.
We have five things which are enhancement, five things which are bugged, which are blocked. And those are ones where it's like somebody started some work on this and then realized that the core problem can't be solved until something else is solved.
Okay.
And those are the ones that have blocked on them, right?
Okay.
But I'm not sure that there's much value in that. I don't personally ever use that. And if I don't use it, I imagine that most people on the team don't use it, at which point if we're not using it, the only value in something is to people who might come in and want to be involved, right? So like good first issue or beginner friendly type thing, that's a good label to have because then people can be like, oh, hey, I want to contribute. Oh, look, here's something they're calling out to me, right? And
I love that label.
And good first issue, I think it should, is because there's actually a contribute page for every repo that GitHub has that will show people the good first issues.
Right.
To get started. Okay. LLVM. Is there any value in the ones that are labeled LLVM? Like, I think the idea was here that some people might want to contribute specifically to LLVM stuff, but that's never really happened. So.
Yeah, we could probably get rid of that.
Okay. Stale. I would say if a thing is stale, we just close it rather than saying stale. I created stale. I don't even know what the point of it is.
Yeah, we've definitely been moving towards the opinion of closing it after a certain amount of time.
Okay. Go, Andy.
Oh, I was just going to say, I thought we had at one point said the point of stale was that we could mark it as stale, and then if it had been stale for longer than a certain period of time, we'd close it. And it was just kind of a reminder to ourselves.
So that we get a two-faced thing.
Yeah, kind of. But if it's not being used that way.
But I don't think it's ever actually being used that way. And, you know... And I think we could just as easily with your handy dandy tool, Andy, it could be adjusted that we could find things which are like haven't been touched in forever. And we could go through those periodically and decide whether we want to close the things or not. We only ever use stale on PRs as well. There's not that many PRs. You didn't even actually need it. because we don't put it on issues, you know? We only put it on PRs. There's like 20 PRs. You can look and immediately see which ones are really old.
Yeah. I think that's...
I apologize.
They're not all yours.
Okay. Yeah, I'm fine with getting rid of it.
Okay, I have enough to move forward with these then. And the idea is that I think I talked into, quote unquote, or Andy more or less basically volunteered to write a thing which will pull in whatever the set standard repo across the board organization ones are and sort of normalize different repos to have those things. So, yes, I came up with three rules for those. There'd still be a bit of manualness because it doesn't involve any deleting. It would be if this tag doesn't exist on the if this label doesn't exist on the repo, create it with all of its correct metadata. If it does exist, but some of the metadata is different from the organization level, change the metadata to the organization level, and that's okay. It. And then we could go through, and then a human could still go through and go, oh yeah, we don't need. Yeah, invalid. No, we're going to delete invalid, blah, et cetera. Then when anybody goes to any of them, we'll have the same labels on all of our libraries, projects, et cetera. We can be able to build tools that would actually work off of those, et cetera, and everything.
I like that.
Man, GitHub Actions has me wanting to automate everything, man.
It is pretty nice from what I've seen. I'm surprised.
There's some quirks, but
once you think about GitHub, GitHub is awesome.
Once you get past the quirks and you understand why the quirks are there, because they're non-obvious, but then eventually they start to make sense. But yeah, I mean, you can do an awful lot of fun stuff with it. And I mean, the GitHub Actions combined with like Gordon's stuff that he did to get the cache stuff for LLVM working correctly. I did a release that was completely done other than me writing the release notes for PonyC that took like less than 10 minutes the other day.
Our CI on PonyC is so much faster now.
That's awesome.
It's boom. Like, unless you do something to invalidate
the... I had to look at all of the CI jobs to make sure they had actually run because I couldn't they had actually go run.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because we only build LLVM, rebuild LLVM if there's something that would change. We got like three keys that are used for it. And so most of the time it's just like, oh, okay, and the entire CI thing for running tests and everything for PR for like the Linux ones completes in less time than it takes to set up the free BSD machines to actually have the correct software on them to start running. And also note that only takes like 5.5 minutes. So
not that bad.
And that's with me doing package. And I set it up to do package update. So that's like 4.5 minutes right there. Okay. I believe there's the Joe things.
We want to do that after the call or like after the, I don't know if people want to stick around for it or just.
I want to learn more about what it is. So,
okay. Do you want me to keep recording, Joe, or is there a reason?
If it's all right, we'll stop recording if that's okay.
Okay. Everybody all right with that? Anybody object?
Nope. Sounds I don't object.
Okay. Thank you all for joining. And if you're not here, but you're listening, thank you for tuning in. And we will talk to you all next week. Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.